Casablanca, city of hope and despair, located in French Morocco in North Africa. The meeting place of adventurers, fugitives, criminals, refugees lured into this danger-swept oasis by the hope of escape to the Americas. But they're all trapped, for there is no escape. Against this fascinating background is woven the story of an imperishable love and the enthralling saga of six desperate people, each in Casablanca to keep an appointment with destiny.
I was willing to shoot Captain Reno, and I'm willing to shoot you.
All right, Major, you asked for it.
Cat is chowing down his breakfast over there.
I was like, I couldn't tell if that was you eating. Like, it's the cat. No. Oh, no.
He's just like, gobble, 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 gobble. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's into it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I'm...
I wish I enjoyed any meal as much as your cat is enjoying the meal right now.
Where are we? All right. Is that better? I don't know. Anyway, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Awards Don't Matter. My name is Andrew Pierce, and I'm joined by my continued co-host, Dave. Welcome. Thanks for joining me to discuss maybe one of the most important Best Picture winners ever, Casablanca.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I only feel, like, I very rarely feel pressure when I podcast, because who gives a shit, right? It's just, like, two dudes talking about movies, but our mutual friend Mike, when I told him I was watching Casablanca, he was like, oh, you're finally watching a movie someone has heard of. You were finally getting to that point in the Oscars. So now I feel a little bit like, oh, God, I better represent for this episode on Casablanca. I would say one of the most well-known movies of all time, period, across genre, regardless of winning awards or not. This is one of the biggies. You know, we talked Citizen Kane a little bit, but luckily we didn't have to talk about it a lot because it didn't win anything, because, you know, that movie's a big loser. Who cares about that?
With a fantastic Criterion Collection cover, which is just a K.
I love it. I love that cover. It's perfect. I was talking to another one of our mutual friends, Manish, about that. How he was like, I love this. It's like megalomania in a cover, like just a giant K. Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic. That will be their first 4K. They're finally joining the future and not sticking with just standard Blu-ray, but Citizen Kane. You know, we talked about movies that matter. I mean, there's a reason they picked that as their very first 4K.
Yeah.
But you could make an argument for a movie like Casablanca, but I'm sure they just don't have the rights. But it's on that level for sure. So now we get to one of the big winners in cinema history with Casablanca. So I'm a little excited, a little nervous to talk about this, but I think we can get it done. I love the fact that you are ill, so I get to talk more. So shut up, Andrew. This is the Dave show. Finally.
Damn straight. Yeah. So in that regard, give me a rundown of what Casablanca is about, then, because, you know, we want our listeners to have a nice listen. As people can tell, we chose for one of the best picture winners ever. We chose the best time for me to get sick. So yeah, let's go.
Yeah, good timing. I mean, I guess the best way to explain Casablanca is, you know, Casablanca is, you know, it's set in the city of Casablanca, and it's set at Rick's American Cafe, or I guess Rick's Cafe Americain, if you want to get fancy about it. And it's basically this kind of waypoint, this stop for all these refugees who are trying to escape the war. But then you've got also this, like, this government that's attached to this area trying to, like, track down all these people. And it's about all the comings and goings, but really it's a love story, right? We are introduced to Rick, who's played by Humphrey Bogart. And then in walks the ex-love of his life, who's now, like, maybe connected to some other guy who is, you know, one of those people who is on the run from these governments, but also is a very important person in terms of, you know, fighting back against these horrible governmental agencies that are out to get them. So it's a political story and a love story all at once. So that's, I guess, the basic rundown of Casablanca. But who hasn't seen Casablanca? It's like, it's Casablanca. It's one of the most well-known movies ever. Andrew, you've seen this, like, once, right? That's when you were like 12 years old or something.
Yeah, it has been maybe about 20 years since I last saw this film. So effectively, it's like the first time. So I rewatched it yesterday, and gosh, they really, like, it is nonsense to say this line, but they really don't make them like this anymore. Like, this film...
I thought you were going to come in here with a hot take, Andrew. I was waiting for Andrew to be like, you know what? Casablanca sucks. Just come in and guns blazing so I could have someone to fight. Because, yeah, they don't make them like this anymore. They really don't. But continue.
Yeah, so I was surprised because at the end of this film, I was just like, I literally just put this film on. I literally just pressed play. And now it's over. It moves so quick. Like,
yeah,
it is over before you know it. And it does it in a really exciting manner, in a sense that it just wraps you up in the fury and the excitement of what's going on. And what I find so interesting is that you're talking about how this is a story about people and the circumstance they're in, but it's also a story about love. But it's clearly, I mean, this is made during World War II. And, you know, I was talking about Mrs. Miniver and how that's off the moment and how it's off about trying to get people into war and trying to get people to fight and stuff. But Casablanca is so much more than that. Like, it is taking the notions of what Mrs. Miniver is about, which is about what is it to be at home? What is it to, you know, fight for your family and stuff like that? And it does it in a way which is like, yeah, you know, all right, I got a family, I got a home, I know what that's about. But Casablanca right. is like...
It's a very, like, as a father of women, like, exactly. it's very, yeah. you know, yeah. like, everyone can relate to this. This is a little more difficult, I think.
Yeah, but I think that the key thing is so Casablanca is like, okay, but everybody wants to be loved and everybody wants to love. And... Mm-hmm. That in itself is a more universal theme, and that is something that I think is really worth fighting for, because it's a lot more than like, hey, this rose is pretty nice looking. Like, this is a really, really, like, I know that it is such a wonderful film in a lot of ways, but I was not expecting to be moved by it in the way that it was, because it's so moving in a lot of different ways, and not like a really weepy way. And I started listening to the Ebert commentary, and he's like, you know, sad films, they don't usually make me cry, because I look at it and I go, well, that's sad. But films like this make me cry. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. This is a movie that, I mean, probably over the years, I've probably seen this like at least 10 or 15 times. Like, this is it's one of those movies, not just that I go back to, but do you ever do this where you're like, you're just waiting and biding your time thinking someday this one isn't going to work. Like, I'm going to rewatch it and I'm going to be like, eh, it's okay. But it never happens. It's always like, it is one of those films that every time you watch it feels brand new. It feels revolutionary. In the way it's telling its story, because essentially, to me anyway, the most important message of this movie is that standing apart from conflict, standing apart from things that matter, doesn't make you better. It doesn't make you someone to look up to. It doesn't make your life any better. Like, we have our character of Rick, who the whole movie is basically like, just like, I don't get involved. What's the line? I don't stick my neck out for anybody. Right. And it ends up, of course, that there's one somebody that he will stick his neck out for, even if he doesn't want to, even if he hates the fact that he loves her. He does, and he cannot deny it. And by the end of this movie, it would be so easy for this movie to be cheesy, right? It's, of course, got one of the greatest endings of all time. You know, the man who lets the woman he loves go and go with this other man because it's better for her, it's better for everyone else, and he's got to hold down the fort. And it's an honorable choice that he makes. But it would be very easy for them to end up together. It wouldn't even be a bad movie if that happened. It wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be Casablanca. It wouldn't be what it is. But the way that this movie ends, of this man who is constantly saying, I won't stick my neck out for anyone, sticks his neck out for someone and is not rewarded for it, and yet he feels better by the end of the movie. That is an incredible story to tell and almost impossible to pull off. And yet, Michael Curtiz and everyone involved in this movie somehow manages it. And every time I watch this, I keep looking for the seams. I keep looking for the strings, for the holes in this movie. And they just, they don't exist.
It's flawless. Like
there are very...
Yeah, absolutely flawless.
Yeah, there are very few... I was just about to say, there are very few movies that I would call perfect. Casablanca is a perfect film. Like, it's one of those that... It's interesting because, of course, surprise, surprise, Ebert is right, right? That this is a movie that, that almost goes beyond happiness and sadness. Like, this movie is not a movie that's, like, actively pulling on your heartstrings. It's like a dull ache. And I think everyone who has been in love and lost love, and not in a way that's, like, supremely painful and, oh, melodramatic, but just that way of, like, this is over. And... it's never going to be what it is, and it doesn't change the way I feel about you, but this is done. That hurts. That is real pain. And you and Bogart is the perfect choice to play this role, to play this like distant man, but also like it's an incredible performance because you have just enough present day stuff and you have just enough flashback. Like it's so perfectly paced. But the scenes in the flashback, they don't do anything to change his face, to do anything with makeup, but because of the way he lights up when he's around her and when he's in love, he looks 10 years younger. And it is a just an incredible performance from Bogart. Bogart has a litany of great performances if you go back and watch his career. But, you know, it feels cheesy to say, but Casablanca is his best performance. Like, of course it is. It's one of the best movies ever made, so of course it's going to have one of the best performances. And Ingrid Bergman is also wonderful in this movie. Just a stunning and subtle performance. Again, both of these roles would be so easy to overplay your hand, and neither of them ever do. Like, you just, it's a movie you just sit in, and you just are surrounded by, and you're so happy to be there. Even when bad things happen to good people, you're still just like, I just want to hang out in this cafe. And like, are there some problematic race elements? Yeah, for sure. But given the time, it's actually not too rough. And to see that character of Sam, like, stand up for Rick, like, when she comes in, is really, really moving. You know, like, his immediate reaction of, like, you know, just stay away. Don't do this. He's been through enough. Haven't you done enough?
Yeah. I don't know if there really is that much of a problematic representation in this film. I felt there wasn't. Mostly because it is a very European cast setting. Obviously, this was filmed in America, and Michael Curtiz is a Hungarian director, which is something I want to touch on in a moment as well. But before I do that, I want to talk about Bogart briefly and ask you a question, pose you a question. One of the things that kind of stuck out to me about watching it this time around was how cool he is. And, like, when I think about cool characters, I didn't usually consider him, mostly because it's been so long since I've seen this. But now all I can think of is how cool his character is. What makes Rick such a cool person to you?
Well, I think actually one of the things that makes him really cool, and I would argue that he's cool until he's very not. When he gets drunk and is like ranting and raving, not cool, not smooth, not subtle at all. But everything up to that, I totally agree with you. And I think there's this air of self-confidence that he has. Even when he should be threatened, he's not. Right? There's guns going off in the bar. There's this woman who wants to be with him, and she's freaking out and screaming and yelling, and he's just like, kind of takes her by the arm, like, you're going home now. Like, we're done here. He's not going to get abusive. He's going to tell her very firmly, I'm not going to have this in my place. And even the stuff, even the race stuff that I mentioned before, you essentially have a character show up and try to purchase this man from him, essentially. And he has the absolute coolest response you could possibly have. Not like, no, that's my piano player and that's my friend, but just goes up to him and goes like, hey, this guy wants to pay you some more. What do you want to do? Gives him the opportunity. Gives him, you know, a sense of independence. Like, hey, if you want to go, you can go. Like, that's no big deal to me. I want you to live your life and be happy, right? So he has he has this distance, right? Which automatically makes a person cool. Just like, I'm kind of above this all. I'm not getting involved. But also, when he has to get involved, he does it in the right way. So yeah, when he gets drunk, he kind of loses it a little bit. But when he decides to do the right thing at the end of this movie, he goes right back to being cool, man. He is like, he says all the right things in order to get done what needs to be done, right? He's not being completely honest about his feelings, for sure, but he knows that this is the best thing for her, so he's going to play it cool. So he just manages to plan everything out, even when he's in a difficult situation. And, like, what's cooler than that? It's like pressure under fire.
Yeah. So one of the things which stuck out to me, because, of course, we talked about Yankee Doodle Dandy in the last episode, and I didn't realize that Curtiz was Hungarian-born. And what stuck out to me about that film, of course, was the hope of America, the aspirations of America, and how great America could be. And that's something that really sticks out in this film as well, is that he manages to create a narrative that is about the hope that America was built on and the strength of the words that are on the Statue of Liberty. And he's clearly a man who believes in the land of hope and dreams. And he fills each of the characters in this particular film with that hope. And it's not just because America is a safe place that they can go to, a neutral territory in some ways. But there is a clear feeling of like, geez, if you're a refugee, you can come here and you'll be okay. And that's something that's really beautiful. And it's really something that I think that you can walk away from a film from Casablanca and, of course, Yankee Doodle Dandy and have that belief that it's going to be a great place to be. And that's what I love about Michael Curtiz as a director, because he manages to slide all of these things into his films in a way that doesn't feel obvious. And it's such a personal thing for him. Like, you can clearly see that it's a personal thing for him because it's woven into the fabric of the film itself, to the point where there is a scene which I think is utterly vital to the film. I mean, obviously, all the scenes are vital, but I think it's vital to the film to allow you to understand why Rick would do what he does at the end. And it's a scene with the Bulgarian wife who is like, my husband is in the gambling room spending all of our money to try and get us tickets to get out of here. What can you do to help me? And Rick goes in there and he's like, put all your money on 22.
What kind of a man is Captain Reno?
Oh, he's just like any other man, only more so.
No, I mean, is he trustworthy? Is his word?
Oh, just a minute. Who told you to ask me that?
He did. Captain Reno did.
I thought so. Where's your husband?
At the roulette table, trying to win enough for our exit visas. Oh, of course, he's losing.
How long have you been married?
8 weeks. We come from Bulgaria. Well, things are very bad there, monsieur. The devil has the people by the throat. So, Jan and I, we did not want our children to grow up in such a country.
And so you decided to go to America?
Yes, but we have not much money, and traveling is so expensive and difficult. It was much more than we thought to get here. And then Captain Renault sees us, and he is so kind, he wants to help us.
Yes, I'll bet.
He tells me he can give us an exit visa, but we have no money.
Does he know that?
Oh, yes.
And he's still willing to give you a visa?
Yes, monsieur.
And you want to know?
Will he keep his word?
He always has.
Oh, monsieur, you are a man. If someone loved you very much, so that your happiness was the only thing that she wanted in the world, but she did a bad thing to make certain of it, could you forgive her?
Nobody ever loved me that much.
And he never knew. And the girl kept this bad thing locked in her heart. That would be all right, wouldn't it?
Do you want my advice?
Oh, yes, please.
Go back to Bulgaria.
Oh, but if you knew what it means to us to leave Europe, to get to America. Oh, but if Jan should find out. He is such a boy. In many ways, I am so much older than he is.
Yes, well, everybody in Casablanca has problems. Yours may work out. You'll excuse me.
Thank you, monsieur.
Do you wish to place another bet, sir? No, I guess not.
Have you tried 22 tonight? I said 22.
Marc Conligeux. Fini. 22. Noir père et passe. 22.
Leave it there.
Marquons les jeux, mesdames et messieurs. Les jeux sont faits. Marquons les jeux. La partie continue. Marquons les jeux. Les jeux sont faits. Rien ne va plus. 22. Noir, père et pas.
Cash it in and don't come back.
Rien ne va plus, monsieur. Fini.
Are you sure this place is honest?
Honest as a day is long.
Without that scene, I don't think that the steps that are taken to allow him to understand, well, to allow the audience to understand why he would give these tickets of passage, essentially, to two people, the person that he loves, why he would do that. Without that scene, it wouldn't make sense. But it's a vital scene, and it's a vital scene in a way that feels so deeply personal. I don't know whether it is personal to Curtiz or not, or whether it's part of the original. I think this was based on a stage play or something like that. But
it was based on an unproduced stage play. It was never performed, but yes, it was technically written before
sure.
this. But
yeah, and yeah. So you know, there's a lot that Curtiz is bringing to the script, and I think in those moments we get to see what he sees in America, what he sees in the society of America, and what he also feels about having left home as well. And it's a really difficult film to watch. Like yesterday was a very difficult film to watch as I was getting, you know, phone alerts of what's going on in Afghanistan. And it's like, this is not a deep and heavy film, but on the same hand, it makes you think about life so much more.
Yeah, I would argue that it is a deep and heavy film, but it's subtly woven into this, right? Because all the things you're saying are true. Like, you can watch this and just be like, well, that was a nice love story, right? Or you can watch this a little bit closer. Like, I think, you know, from a larger perspective, probably the most important scene is the scene where, I'll butcher this pronunciation, but they play La Marseillaise, or the moment where all the French join in, right? And it's really important because it promotes this idea. You mentioned patriotism earlier, and this is a subtle way of talking about freedom and quote unquote the American way without it being about America, right? And it being all encompassing. And It's another moment, just like that moment, the gambling moment, where it's a blink and you miss it moment. They're about to play it, and the band looks to Rick for his okay. And he very easily could have been like, we're going to stay out of this. I'm not sticking my neck out for anybody. But he just nods his head and goes, okay. Right? And it's this kind of tacit accepting of the fact that this is important. This is a moment that needs to happen. And again, it's another thing that leads to his final decision. Like, the most important thing about his final decision is, of course, his romantic relationship, right? But there's so much more to it than that. This is not solely a love story. This is known as one of the greatest love stories of all time. But, I mean, this could be known as one of the most patriotic or one of the best war pictures without war ever made. Like, this is as engrossing and says more about taking a stand than maybe every war picture that's ever been made. Like, I'll take this over any standard war movie in terms of, like, doing the right thing and standing up. Like, this is it, man. I think some of that weirdly goes unnoticed, because I think sometimes when a movie is known as one of the greatest of all time, I think people hand wave it away. Like, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, of course it's good. Anyway, and you don't think about it because you're like, yeah, everyone thinks it's good. It must be good. Whatever. I'm not going to fight it because I enjoyed my time. But there is a lot under the surface in this movie that's more than just Bogart and Ingrid Bergman.
Oh, so much more.
Like, there's a lot going on.
And I think that his nod to say, yes, play that song, is his act against the Nazis in a way as well, because
yeah.
he, he doesn't, you know, while he's in Casablanca, he can't fire a shot. You know, his defense there is limited. And yet, because of those flashbacks, because of what we get to see about him and learn about him, we know that this song in itself, this proof of culture, this proof of history, life, and celebration of the French people will be his version of a shot. And
right,
I find that so beautiful in a lot of different ways. And it also leads into, you know, the person, because this is unoccupied France area, and that lead character, Claude Rains, I believe it is, Captain Renault, who is effectively, you know, is trying to run the whole place, and he is, you know, being a nice guy to the Germans while he's also trying to run the whole entire town and stuff.
He's so charming in this movie. He is so charming. It's so great opposite of Bogart, because Bogart is cool, but he's also very abrasive. And Claude Rains is kind of the opposite. He's not cool at all, but you get why he ends up getting stuff done, because he kind of glad hands everybody throughout the entire film.
But he's really very works. Much like, no, you're going to do this now in a nice way. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Sure. I didn't expect I was going to do that.
I guess
okay.
I'll do that. Yeah.
But then.
Yeah. I think another thing that stands out about Bogart here is, like you mentioned, I bring it up because you had mentioned this idea of, like, this is his shot across the bow, right? This is the one stand he can take. And it's so interesting because for a man who, like, I don't want to get involved, I'm keeping my distance, he has every opportunity to hand over this, you know, these travel passports, essentially, where you can go anywhere. He's got them for the whole movie. At any point, he could just hand it over and be done with all this. But he chooses to hold on to them. And I would argue that it's not simply to have a trump card, but it's to, you know, it's to do the right thing. Like, he is, whether he would admit it or not, he is always looking to take a stand, even when he knows it is not the smart thing to do. Because all through this movie, there are numerous opportunities for him to do the smart thing for his own survival. And he actively chooses not to do it. And by the end of the movie, he not only actively chooses not to do that, he actively chooses to stand up against a totalitarian regime, which is it's one of the bravest acts you'll see on film. And I think, again, it goes under the radar because he's so fucking cool about everything. And the way he pulls it off is like, yeah, I got this, guys. But, like, it's really gutsy and really brave. And it's one of those endings that no matter how many times you see it, some movies have endings that have twists. And this is a twist, right? The way this ends. But some movies have these twists and you're like, okay, now I saw the twist. Okay, now I'm done. I don't need to watch this again. But watching his performance here is like, it's like watching a masterclass in acting. Like, it's absolutely incredible. And the acting really does carry this movie. It's not, to me, it's not the direction. It's not the cinematography. Like, Ebert has been quoted talking about, the movie's kind of astounding because there's almost not a single shot you can call out where you're like, yeah, there's the moment. Like, I guess the closest thing is the two guys, like, walking away, but it's a very simple shot of two men walking away off an airport hangar. Like, that's maybe the most memorable visual moment in the whole movie. The rest of this is propelled by acting and propelled by story.
And it's insane as well that, I mean, it was only Claude Rains and Bogart that were nominated for awards, and they didn't win. Neither of them won. They lost to Watch on the Rhine and The More the Merrier. And Bergman was nominated for Whom the Bell Tolls. Which, you know,
Jesus Christ,
it's insane that a film this great only won 3 awards: best picture, best director, and best script. But it is, you know, it comes back to the testament of being like, well, it doesn't matter how many awards that you've won, as long as it's the main one, that's the one that kind of stands out, and that's the one that people will remember. Yeah,
yeah, it's interesting, and I don't, you know, I obviously love this movie, but, like, I wouldn't have been mad if Michael Curtiz didn't win for this. Like, I don't think it's, I mean, I think it's an accomplished directed movie, but it's not something that really stands out. And I'm still kind of glad that he won for this, because it is one of the greats. But it's almost nice that this year, because I think this leads us into talking about all these other movies I forced myself to watch, It's kind of nice that this year is actually very underwhelming, because like it makes Casablanca stand out even more. And like I have to give you some respect, Andrew, because the one movie that we're also going to cover in this kind of set is the only other movie that's really any good.
And it only got nominated for one award.
It's insane. It's crazy. So I watched all these movies. For Home the Bell Tolls is a bad movie, like an actively bad movie. Bergman is bad in it. Everyone is bad in it. It's poorly directed. It's poorly written. It kind of takes a book and just kind of takes like 20% of it and makes it into a movie. It's bad. Heaven Could Wait is all right. It's silly. It's a silly little comedy, slice of life movie. It's nice. Human Comedy is terrible. Like just obnoxiously saccharine. Just a bad movie. In Which We Serve is fine. It's a Noel Coward movie. It's a standard war picture. Madame Curie is a bad biopic. The More the Merrier is nice. That's a nice movie. I wouldn't have minded that one being a little more known. The Song of Bernadette has a great lead performance in a bad movie. I think you're seeing a theme here. Lots of bad movies. Watch on the Rhine, also not great. So really the only one that's worth its salt in any way to me is this and the Oxbow Incident. Like they're both, to me, they are both 5-star movies. Casablanca is better, but like only marginally so. And that should tell you what I think about the Oxbow Incident, because this is one of the greatest movies ever made. But like in general, kind of a shit year. Like the whole time I'm watching these movies, keep waiting for something good. And I made the mistake of watching the Oxbow Incident first. I'm going to be really honest. I was being very lazy, because the Oxbow Incident, as we're recording, is also a movie that is leaving the Criterion Channel at the end of the month. So I was writing a piece on it for In Session Film. So I was like, oh, I can knock both these out at once. I got to watch it for Andrew. I'm going to watch it for this. Great. And then, of course, we'll talk about it, but it's fantastic. But then everything else I watched, I was like, ah, thank God I saved Casablanca, because I was like, okay, I need something good, because this year, it's really bad. It's so weird, because at the top of that year, just phenomenal movies that will be remembered forever, and then a bunch of shit, just scattered throughout. So it was, I am now extra grateful that soon there will only be 5 nominees, because I sat through like 9 movies that were not good.
Well, exactly. You know, it's nice to see that, you know, the following year they decided maybe we shouldn't be doing, you know, 10, 11, 12 nominees. Maybe we should just reduce it down to 5. And
maybe we should pick some good movies.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one of the main aspects of that is that, you know, especially when it comes to a film like Casablanca, which visually, as you're saying, isn't really that astounding. They reuse sets. You know, it is very kind of workmanlike in the sense that the sets were reduced to bare bones in a lot of ways. There was a shortage of nails. There was a shortage of wood and stuff like that. All of these things that had to go after war. So it's almost a miracle in a way that it looks as great as it does. Even the models look really good too. And that's one of the things, again, you know, and I don't mean to retell all of Ebert's commentary, but it's one of the things which he mentions in the sense that, like, oh, when a plane is flying in the air, it's physically impossible for the people to be staring up and looking at the plane at this point. All right, at the angle that it's flying. But it doesn't matter, because it's, you know, the story itself is so strong that it doesn't matter. It's not about those finessing of those kinds of aspects, of the creative aspects. It's about the heart of it. It's about the humanity of it. And that's why it works so well. It is a genuine masterpiece of cinema. And it's hard to talk about, because, as you were saying before, you come to these films and, you know, we watch them and you kind of feel, oh, that's Casablanca. You know, it would just tick that off. But there is so much more to it. It is such a brilliant film in a lot of different ways that I think that, it kind of leads into the next kind of thing which I want to touch on, which is one of the enduring things that we talk about with this particular show. In all of the films that we've watched, how many times do you think they've actually gotten it right? Because they've clearly gotten it right here. But how many times do you think they've gotten it right?
I think, well, it's it's a hard question to answer, right? Because, like, are you asking, did they get it right with the nominees they
had?
Yeah,
with the nominees.
Or did
they
get
had.
It? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I would say, it's hard to remember all the complaints that I've had because I complain all the time. But I'd say they're about, like, you know, 30 to 50% right.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's usually at least, like, and usually they don't pick, like, the worst one. Usually it's, like, my second or third choice, except for Gone with the Wind, that was, which is, like, the accepted one of the most amazing movies ever made, according to everyone else. So what the fuck do I know? But that's the one that stands out where I'm like, yeah, they got it wrong five times over. But, like, this one, they definitely got it right. Like, there's an argument to be made for the Oxbow incident, absolutely. But I do think they really got it right. And there's two things that I kept thinking about as you were talking and we were talking. Is one that, like, this is maybe the greatest use of a single song in movie history. Like, it should get old. When they play it for the sixth time, you should be like, okay, that's enough. But because it's tied into emotion, it is, I mean, everyone who's ever been in a powerful romantic relationship has a their song, right? You have that one that you connect over, and this, like, laces it into the script of the movie. That, like, okay, we're going to replay this, and we're going to replay it in parts. We're going to have moments where you start to play it, and Rick comes in ranting and raving, like, stop playing that song. Or, you played it for her, you're going to play it for me. Like, just so angry about everything. And it becomes a stand-in for their relationship. And what a powerful way to do that. So, Ingrid Bergman can be off-screen for 35 minutes, but that song has played three times, so both you and Rick cannot forget her. Right? And it's such a wonderful way to accomplish this.
Play it once, Sam. For all time's sake.
I don't know what you mean, Miss Elsa.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
Oh, I can't remember it, Miss Elsa. I'm a little rusty on it.
I'll hum it for you. Sing it, Sam.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
And the other thing I kept thinking is, like, how easy would this be to make Laszlo a villain? To make him the bad guy? But they never do. He is a man who's doing the right thing. Who is never, in all of this, is never at fault. And neither is she for quote-unquote cheating on her husband. She thought he was dead. She had to try and move on. So, like, it's a fantastic way to make absolutely everyone blameless. And yet have everyone blame one another. Like, for what's going on. Like, he blames her because she disappeared. Valid, right? She blames him for, like, hating her for all these years when in her mind, she didn't have a choice, right? There's nothing she could have done that was different. Like, I guess maybe she could have talked to him and told him, okay, this is my life story. This is why I'm leaving. But then he would have tried to get her to stay, and she knows in her heart she would have stayed because she loves him more than she loves her husband, right? And what a weight to carry with you. Right? No one in this, even though he sends her off free and lets her live her life, she doesn't leave free. She doesn't leave baggageless. She knows that she still loves Rick and that if he would have done things different, she would have stayed with him or taken him with her. So now she has to go back to her life on the run with this leader of the resistance and know that back in Casablanca, there's this man who loves her and she loves him, but they can't be together. What a painful end. Like, it's so interesting because this is known as one of the most romantic movies ever made, but it's like maybe one of the most bittersweet endings I've ever seen on film. And again, it never lets up. No matter how many times you watch this, it still stings. Like, I watch this and even though I know how it's going to end, you're still kind of rooting for Rick to make a different choice. Because you're like, you two should, you're so good. You should be together. And also, you want him to be honorable. You want him to do the right thing. So you're torn between the romantic part of your soul and the empathetic, kind part of your soul. And you want both, but you have to make a choice.
I think there's two things as well that I think is really impressive as well, is that whenever, again, Laszlo could be a villain, but he's not. And there's a few small little creative choices here that actually show how strong a character he is and how important he is to the Resistance.
Yeah.
He has a scar on his face, a very little scar, but it just hints at the kind of the pain that he's
been through it.
He's been through stuff, okay? And he's a good person. And that's the other thing, is we want him to succeed. We want him to get to America to try and help the Resistance from there, to strengthen the Resistance. And, you know, I think Rick knows clearly that this is bigger than him. It's bigger than both of them. And that's something that he needs to relinquish. The other aspect of humanity, which I find really poignant as well, alongside the song that keeps on getting repeated, is the power of a single tear. You know, every so often we'll get a shot of Bergman with a tear rolling down her face, or like when the song, the French song, is playing and we get a glimpse of Yvonne standing there at the bar and this single tear is dropping down her face. And it's like these people living in a town or a city that they are kind of bottling up their emotions, and that's the way that it's seeping out. It's, you know, they are trying as best as they can to stifle it down, because they know that if they let it go, it might just not stop. And right. I think that in itself is so clearly evident, because there is so much strength and humanity within each of these people, yet there is so much vulnerability and there is so much at stake for everybody that is clear in their eyes as they're walking around. Like, we want to get out of this place. You know, we don't want to be here, but we're here and we don't know what's going to happen. And now the Germans are here and the threat is real and it's palpable and we feel it within them. And that's what makes it so much stronger.
Yeah, and that's the other thing they do really well in this movie, is very quickly setting the stakes. Like, there is a sequence with essentially a stranger, like, running from the police, and they just shoot him in cold blood. They shoot him in the back, essentially. And it's like, oh, shit is serious here. Like, this is not just, like, everyone's too cool for school and everyone's going to be fine. There are going to be people who are in real danger. And you mentioned this idea of not only, like, if they do let all that emotion out, it's never going to stop, but also if you let all that emotion out, you're marking yourself as someone who's involved in this. And, like, letting a single tear go, you can hide. But breaking down and crying about this, you can't, you know? And it's just, like, it's such a powerful movie, and it does have so many levels. Like, it's one of those movies, one of the few, that the more I watch it, the more I get from it. And that is the mark of great cinema to me, is like, because there are great movies that you can watch once or twice and you're like, okay, I got it. I got what this movie is putting down. I'm good now. Casablanca is not that movie. If you have only seen this once and you feel like you have learned everything there is to learn about Casablanca, I'm here to tell you you're wrong. You have not. There is more to it than you think. This is not just a love story. This is not just a war story. This is, as you so succinctly put it, this is a story about humanity. And about the reasons that we stand up and what we put ourselves through for honor, for love, for life. And it takes it all in. And it's also a movie that keeps you on your toes. I remember thinking that Peter Lorre was going to be a big part of this movie, because he's so recognizable. Peter Lorre plays Ugarte in this, who is essentially shot at and then arrested and then never makes another appearance in the movie. He just disappears. He's there to provide these things to Rick that he keeps hidden. And that's it. So you just never know when a person is going to enter and stay, or enter and never return. And that is, I mean, that's essentially Rick's Café Américain in one sentence, right? Some people are going to stay there and get stuck. Some people are going to come and leave rather quickly. And it's every time I think about this movie, there's a different scene that stands out. And one of the scenes that really stands out to me is there's a sequence that solidifies Laszlo as a good guy, right? There's someone who comes to sell his jewelry to him to find a way out. And at first he's like, no, I'm not going to help you out. And then he shows him he's part of the Resistance. And the way that his face changes and the steps that he takes after that matter. And, you know, not only helping out a complete stranger, but also, you know, sharing a drink with him and being kind to him and connecting with him at the bar. And then the movie, of course, does a wonderful job at, again, upping the stakes, because all of a sudden, you know, a man in uniform shows up and you see everything change and you see everyone straighten up and be like, no, oh, we're just having some champagne. Everything's fine. Don't worry about us, you know. And it's, this movie is full of fantastic performances. Like, there's not a weak performance in this movie. Even people who are only there for one scene, man, they bring it. That scene you mentioned with the gambling scene with the Bulgarian wife, like, oh my God, what a performance. And, I mean, she's got what, 5-10 lines? But you remember her forever.
But even the husband as well, this movie, who has no lines, and all we see of him is sitting at the table, and the look on his face is like, I'm losing, and my wife and my future is on the line right now. And yeah, if
it's
I
all
lose,
going down the drain,
this is it.
Yeah.
And then when he starts to win, and he can't even believe it, he doesn't know what's going on, and the look on his face is like, oh, we're going to be safe. And
yeah, and you see Bogey like willing him to shut up, like, just don't react, just take your money and leave, it's time to go. Like, again, so cool, so much cooler than anyone else involved in this place, you know. And it's just, God, what a movie, man. This is, I feel like, you know, in the newest Tarantino movie, Pacino, like, what a picture. Like, that's how I feel like when I watch this movie. I'm just like, yeah, this is it. And it's so nice when a movie like this, a movie as well known as this, doesn't disappoint. Because you almost can't help but be underwhelmed when you watch a movie and you're like, hey, this is one of the 5 greatest films ever made. Enjoy. How do you not have high expectations? How do you not go into this with like, all right, you better be good? And then it is. And it's somehow... it somehow is better than you expect. Like, that is a great movie that even with those sky-high expectations, this is a movie, and I think it's not just because it's better than you think it is, but it's so different than you think it is. If you've never seen Casablanca and someone tells you you should watch this, no matter what you're expecting, I can tell you that you're wrong. Like, it's not the movie that you think it's going to be, and that's such a revelation when it comes to people like us who've watched a lot of movies, right? It's so rare to be so taken aback and so surprised by a movie. And I'm still surprised by it. And I've seen it in double digits. And every time I watch it, I kind of forget how good it is. And I kind of forget the twists and turns it takes.
Yeah, I think for me, like, having taken so long to come to this film, there is that anxiety of it. And certainly looking at the Best Picture winners to come, I think that's the not anxiety, but the stress of coming to Best Picture winners. You know, certainly they should be titans of cinema. They should be the monuments. They should be the Shakespeares of cinema, essentially, the pinnacles. But then in a lot of ways, they are dragged down by your, you know, really average films that win Best Picture. And it should, you know, makes films like Casablanca stand out even more, but it makes it even more... you know, if you're young or if you're, even if you're old and you're coming to Casablanca new, there is still that kind of, oh, is this going to be good? Is this going to be great? Who knows? It's been built up so much.
And don't you think that this is a movie that gets better as you get older?
It will do.
Like,
yeah.
this is not, it's not a young person's movie. Like, I saw it, I think, for the first time when I was 18 and I really liked it. But like, man, that relationship hits different when you're in your 40s. Like, it's like, yeah, I get that now. Like, I, you know, the one that got away, the doing the honorable thing for the betterment of someone else is not something you do when you're 18, right? But you could do that in your 30s and 40s. Like, I watched it now and I was just kind of amazed at how much more I liked it. I think on Letterboxd, because I did this thing when I first got Letterboxd, is I went through all the movies that I had seen and just started rating them without rewatching them. And I think I gave this 4.5 stars and I watched it again and I was like, Dave, no. No, this is a 5-star movie. It's perfect. Like, and it was like, what are you trying to be cool about this? And I probably was thinking about it as my 18-year-old self was. And like, yeah, that was a really good movie. But now I watch it and I'm like, okay, that is a great film. And I don't know what I was thinking. This is one of this. Ooh, I have to think about it. But this could be the best movie we've seen so far.
No, I mean, Rebecca's still there. Like, that's still, that's going to be a hard film to beat for me. But it is second. It is close.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this might beat it for me. God, it's so good. And I, again, I was just so surprised at just how great this was. And I'd be interested to hear what you think in a couple years when you rewatch Rebecca, because that was your first watch of it. So it's like it's very visceral, and it makes me wonder: are you still going to have that reaction on second watch like you have with this?
I hope so. But I hope so. And I think both of those films are ones that I can understand why people revisit them as they get older. You know, in your 60s and 70s, you go, Casablanca will make me remember my own past, even though I was not around during World War II, never been to Casablanca,
no.
But it will make me think of my own past, and that's the main thing.
Totally.
So the obvious question then, Dave. Hey.
Nope, doesn't matter. Stupid doesn't. Movie. Who cares? No one will ever remember. No, it, of course.
It's
of
maybe
course
the
it matters.
Film like this, that matters the most. Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of, especially in terms of Oscars, in terms of great films, like, you, I mean, there is a reason. There are many reasons, but there is a reason that this movie is always, always, always featured on those Oscar clips, right? The here's looking at you, kid. This is the start of a beautiful friendship. So it's just because they're really memorable, great lines. But also, this is it, man. This is, especially for American, like, this is American cinema, like, distilled down to, like, an hour and 40 minutes. That's the other thing, by the way. I expected this to be much longer. I forgot that this is a less than 2-hour movie.
It's so
like
quick.
This just flies, so man. Quick. It books.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely. And by the way, you brought up the next year's Oscars. I just looked and now I just know I'm going to be mad. I haven't even seen the movie that won. I'm not going to say what it is yet, but there's already a couple other nominees that I'm like, seriously? That didn't win? God, this is just going to piss me off, isn't it? God damn it.
And there is a film on there that we'll be covering, which I think is quite interesting, but that's future episode stuff. We'll get there. Let's not rush ahead.
So does it matter?
Of course
does
it
matter,
does.
Andrew?
Of course it matters. Yeah, okay, it okay. is. It is. To me, this is the kind of film that when we talk about the Oscars, it is the kind of film that we think about when we talk about the Oscars, and we hold up every other winner to this. Well, every other winner to a point. And I think, I mean, it's a long way away. But I think of, you know, when we hit maybe the 2010s and stuff like that, and then we look at Moonlight and Parasite, they're the modern winners that I think are the equals of Casablanca in the sense that, you know, we are going to hold up.
I think one of those is. I think one of those is. I won't tell you
well,
which one.
I know
one,
which
but
one, but
one
that's fine.
Is.
But I think...
they don't. Keep the mystery alive, Andrew. They don't know me. They're just some... I'm just some American interloper on this Australian podcast. They don't know me.
Yeah, I know. You don't like the foreign films. It's okay. It's okay. You can be... That's okay.
True. True.
But I think that...
Only the ones that don't win, like Pan's Labyrinth. Those are the ones I like.
Yeah, it wasn't even nominated for Best Picture, but that's fine. But I think this is what we think of, and we hold up the benchmark of every other film to Casablanca and say, you're not Casablanca. You know, you're greatest show on earth. What are you doing here? You're not Casablanca. That kind of thing.
Yankee Doodle Dandy, you're not Casablanca.
Exactly. And one of the things I said, you know, kind of coyly in the last episode was that some might say that Michael Curtiz won as a makeup for Yankee Doodle Dandy. I was just joking.
No. No one has ever said that before you said that. That was
I'm
the
just
first
joking.
Time. Yes.
Right. Casablanca is a win for itself. Anyway.
Yes.
You can find us on Twitter, Awardstone Pod.
What are we doing next before we get into Twitter?
Right.
What are we doing next?
Yeah. We are doing...
What kind of show are you running around here? Get it together, will you?
These bloody cough medicine drugs, they're making my head go crazy.
That's right.
I'm going to re-listen to this and say, what are you talking about? Casablanca was terrible. The Oxbow Incident is what we're doing next, which is the last film to only to receive a nomination only for Best Picture. So...
Yeah, and you should watch it before you listen to our episode. It's right now, depending on, it's on Criterion, and I think it's available, like, on YouTube.
I watch it on YouTube.
It's like, isn't it like 87 minutes? Like, it
no,
is so short.
It is
flies.
Shorter than that, which is one of the things.
77 minutes.
Yeah, 75 minutes. So, yeah it is, it's getting
an
shorter every time
minutes.
That we mention this, the running length.
That's right. That's shorter than most, like, pilots of TV shows. So you have no excuse not to watch this.
I watched this on the same day that I watched that Zack Snyder zombie film, and I was like, I could have watched Oxbow Incident twice.
Boy, you made some choices.
I made a lot of choices that day.
one of them was good. One of them was a good choice. And one of them was a Zack Snyder movie. So that, why would you do to yourself? I still haven't watched that one.
Look, Jesus Christ. Oxbow Incident is what we're watching next. It is on YouTube. It's on Criterion Channel. You would do yourself a favor by watching this film. It is genuinely great. And usually we don't kind of heavy load these things, but I think that this is an undervalued film in a lot of different ways. So watch it before our next episode. Badger Dave on Twitter at Darn That Dave. Badger me on Twitter at The Curb AU. And then badger both of us collectively at Awards Don't Pod. And listen to previous episodes at thecurb.com.au. Yeah. Hopefully
Absolutely. Yeah. You should go see Andrew online, and he'll probably be talking about, like, Fortnite in Marvel movies or some nonsense. See,
you can tell where my peak of my feverish state is, where I start.
Right now, I know. Now that I'm hearing you, I'm like, oh, okay, I see he's not where well this right came now. From.
He's not well.
Yeah, but find us Awards Don't Pod, The Curb AU, and Darn That Dave. We will be, we might not be nice, but we'll be sure to respond. Exactly. So we have that guarantee from us. So
some people are surprised how nice I can be. So, you know, I'm glad that I'm not.
Well, I won't be. I will balance this out. I will be mean. You'll be good cop.
Happy
I'll be bad
to do
cop.
That. That so, sounds good. Thanks, great. Guys. We'll see you in the next one.
If you don't mind, you fill in the names. That'll make it even more official.
You think of everything, don't you?
And the names are Mr. and Mrs. Victor Laszlo.
But why my name, Richard?
Because you're getting on that plane.
I don't understand. What about you?
I'm staying here with him till the plane gets safely away.
No, Richard, no. What has happened to you?
We said a great many things. You said I was to do the thinking for both of us. Well, I've done a lot of it since then. It all adds up to one thing. You're getting on that plane with Victor where you belong.
But, Richard, no one...
Now, you've got to listen to me. You have any idea what you'd have to look forward to if you stayed here? 9 chances out of 10, we'd both wind up at a concentration camp. Isn't that true, Louis?
I'm afraid, Major Strauss, I would insist.
You're saying this only to make me go.
I'm saying it because it's true. Inside of us, we both know you belong with Victor. You're part of his work, the thing that keeps him going. If that plane leaves the ground and you're not with him, you'll regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life.
But what about us?
We'll always have Paris. We didn't have, we lost it until you came to Casablanca. We got it back last night.
When I said I would never leave you.
And you never will. But I've got a job to do, too. Where I'm going, you can't follow. What I've got to do, you can't be any part of. Ilse, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Someday you'll understand that. No, no. Is looking at you, kid.